podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with German artist and teacher Roland de Vries. We found each other on the Saatchi site. I found him and featured one of his pieces as my daily art, and then he reached out to me. I knew I had to have him on the show. We talk about his practice. He does it all. He draws, he paints, he does installations, he shoots, as a photographer, of course. We talk about the importance of learning to see. To do this, he carries a sketchbook around with him to grab sketches of scenes, as opposed to the quick iPhone snapshots that we hardly take the time to revisit. These turn into his beautiful compositions. We talk about it all. Enjoy! So you were telling me about this New York Fashion grant you were applying for today.
New York Fashion is going to be, I don't know, hundreds if not thousands of applications basically coming in. But I still believe that I'm perfect for this.
Yeah.
Basically be working with one of the city departments and then eventually basically a public facing installation and art walks and things like that. But the whole thing stretched out over a period of 12 months. I would be super excited if I got this.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds amazing. So like, have you gotten other grants before?
Yes, I've only started basically just before the pandemic hit. Basically, I had started getting into, grant writing. Mm-hmm. It's a whole separate thing. This is like a science or something. Yeah. First, you have to understand what is it actually that you need to communicate and that what the other side wants to hear and how to present it. And it's quite complex.
Yeah.
And so last year there was this wonderful program that that Mayor de Blasio, was still the mayor of New York City, mm-hmm. had initiated called New York City Artist Corps. Mm-hmm. And it was basically sort of like the understanding that, you know, New York City, really, there's a lot of arts and the city really thrives and lives through the arts and all the cultural, whether it's theater or the opera or, you know, street artists or what have you, you know, right. Galleries, et cetera. And so in this spirit, basically in this sense, the mayor had initiated this program, mm-hmm. where 2,400 artists got an opportunity to create something that was public facing and sort of like to communicate to the world and to the city, basically, you know what, New York City is not dead.
Yeah.
It's actually quite coming back, you know, with, and better than before.
Right.
And I was one of the, they had tens of thousands of applications, and I was one of the people that they had picked, and I got a beautiful spot just outside of Chelsea Market, which is sort of like a very hip neighborhood for those that are not familiar. If you're not familiar with New York City, you know, there's the High Line and there's Chelsea, and that's sort of like the heart of many galleries anyways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Google's headquarters is there, basically in a converted building and whatnot. And this was on a sidewalk, basically, with lots of foot traffic, one day only. And it was basically an installation that I had created, built, painted, mm-hmm. That was three-dimensional, where people could step behind. Literally, if you were coming to this, you would step behind what was a painted cityscape, basically with skyscrapers and townhouses and whatnot, and hold up a heart and complete a sentence that was in a big banner behind you that read, "I heart New York City." But by doing this, by holding up this heart,
right.
you sort of like completed the statement.
Yeah.
So, you know, had hundreds of people stepping into this thing, and lots of happy faces and lots of smiles, and people were taking photos, and the mayor had sent his cultural affairs people over, and they had picked this particular installation basically to represent the program. So we had some city officials there also. It was just a wonderful day.
That
was one grant basically, or that was one of those opportunities basically. And you know, I've done a lot of teaching, Brooke. I've done that for many years. Mm-hmm. And you know, I like basically when art has an opportunity to, you know, a lot of the really super high end, the stuff that goes through Sotheby's and through Christie's and whatnot, oftentimes is sort of like, it ends up in, you know, for a seen only by a very thin slice of society, basically.
Right. Because not everyone goes into substance or Christie's.
Right, and it may end up in a vault. It's just an investment, have you.
Exactly.
Right, and in best case scenario, it's in a museum or so where we can actually go and see it.
Right.
I like sort of like art that communicates with people and communicates with public, you know, so this public art aspect, basically, or public facing art.
Right.
Something that I love, basically, and I've sort of like found myself more and more interested in that because it sort of like has a little bit of, I don't want to say, you know, educational, but it has a little bit of that. You're communicating with your audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very direct. It's like direct democracy or something.
You know? Right, right. Well, I wanted to ask you, you do drawings, you do paintings, and you do drawings and paintings. So how does that transform to like you said, an installation? That's like a thing that, you know, that you put in the like public art. And how does like a 2D something like a painting or a drawing, how do you transform that into like a living and breathing public art? I'm not using the right words, I'm sure.
That's a good, very good question, Brooke. It's a very complex question, but I didn't grow up in New York. I've moved here about 25 years ago. I grew up in Europe. But when I came here, you know, I was already doing the things that I'm doing, but the thing was, you know, I came here because I loved New York City so much. I had visited numerous times. I really loved the city. So I came here purposefully, moved to New York City.
Right. From Germany.
And I've been here ever since. And I still love it. It's still one of the best places, the most fascinating places in the world, in my opinion. You know, the energy and everything, the all of it. You know, I've always, I carry a sketchbook with me. When I leave the house, I carry a small sketchbook with me, you know, different sizes, but usually something that I can easily carry with me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just a pencil or an ink pen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I find myself, and there's no shortage of street corners or buildings or things in New York, of course, where it's like, oh, wow, this is so cool, no?
Right, right.
So I find myself, you know, I just sit on a park bench or I sit on stand on a street corner or something and I start drawing or so. Mm-hmm. And it does something. And it basically, what it does is it's a more... intense way of seeing, of looking at what's in front of me. Mm-hmm. You know, many people you can see if they're walking through a gallery or if they're walking on the street, basically, they're tourists and they snap pictures with their iPhones, you know, or with their smartphones.
Right.
And they don't really look. They take out the phone, click, walk. Continue to walk, you know?
Got it.
It may never come back, return to looking at that photo.
Right.
So it's sort of like a potential memory that's lost to the digital space in that
they
sense.
They haven't
right?
actually like, seen.
Right. But when you stand on a street corner and you draw a building or something or a roof line or a water, whatever is across from you, a city bus, mm-hmm. people walking past by you,
right.
and you spend 20 minutes doing that, you do more than just drawing this, is penning this down on paper, mm-hmm. but you're sort of like creating, something happens in your head, basically, where you remember what you did there at that moment. So, you know, I give art classes and stuff where we go to Central Park or something and we'll do things like that. And it's always this thing that I wanna communicate basically to people that even if they're just like absolute freshmen and this is the first time that they're doing this, mm-hmm. You're gonna remember this even in years from today, right. where you were and how it felt, and maybe you may even remember whether it was raining or whether it was fair or whether it was hot or, you know, because it's such a you know, through what you're doing with your hand and your pen and your eye, you're basically you're something else happens in your brain, in your mind, basically.
Yeah.
You're creating a memory that's quite different from the memory of just snapping the photo, you know. And from there, from this ground level experience, basically, that is where the connection in my mind happens to, let's say, bigger public art.
Yeah.
Where you are the person who steps in front of the into the installation, or who just sees the installation or sees the work in front of them, is not the artist, is not the maker, right, or the creator,
right?
But let's say, when I'm gonna say good art, and by that I mean not good or not good quality, but I mean art that manages to make that connection, basically, to an audience or just a single person, basically, then trigger something that is similar to that simple sketching or drawing experience that I just talked about.
Right.
It creates a memory, and it creates something not just about what the artwork is about, but also the space that the artwork is in.
Right. Oh, I like
you know.
That.
So,
yeah.
So a good art is that's a silly term, basically, but art that manages to do that, basically, can be site specific. You know, it can make a difference whether you're doing this in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And you may have very different things you want to communicate as an artist in the Midwest or Southwest, than let's say in Boston or Philadelphia or New York or Hamburg, Germany, or whatever for that matter. You know,
right? Yeah.
I'm interested in that. That I think is a very cool thing. That's a
sort
of like a quality that exists, or that exists that doesn't exist in a simple framed drawing or painting that's hanging on some wall.
Right. Just kind of taking advantage of the space.
Yeah. Yes. And a dialogue that happens between the art and the audience.
And the space and the audience. Yeah. That is really cool.
It's in a way you could say it's an element that exists in performing arts, of course. You know, we go to a concert, we go to a theater play or whatever, and we have a response to what's going on the stage. And you know, public art, or the type of public art that I'm interested in, an installation sort of like sneaks in and manages to do something very similar, maybe.
Right.
Ideally.
Well, it also, you made me think of this when you were saying like a play. A play seems like very different than like art, like painting or drawing, because with art, I mean, with plays, it's kind of like live and you never know what's going to happen. It's just kind of, I don't know. I always think of like a painting as just, you know, it's there. But like with public art, I guess it's the same thing. It's pretty much the same as acting, because it's like, because you're performing. And I think that's that's kind of like a performance art aspect.
There's a wide range of what you could call public art. You know, you know, we have this beautiful new term, public facing art, and that may be closer to what we're talking about.
Okay.
If you just have something on a pedestal and it's a sculpture of some wartime general or something from 200 years ago or so, it's a different thing because it commemorates whatever achievements or personality or something.
Right.
You have, let's say, if you look at Christo and Jean-Claude's gates in Central Park, when was that, early 2000s or so, or IYY basically doing the Golden Cage that was outside of Central Park a couple of years ago, you know, where people could actually walk into a giant golden cage and then it's like triggers these things. Oh, wait a second, you know, You know, that's of course different from something that's just simply a sculpture, you know.
Right. Of course.
Since there exists, people walk by that, you don't have to interact. You just,
right.
Oh, I know the person, I don't, or if it's abstract, just like, what is this? You know, yeah, it's a column. Yeah. Is it, what is it? You know,
it's easy to pass by, easy to walk by.
Right. It's not provoking any direct audience response or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? Yeah. You know, it's, well, so that's one of the things that's, you know, I think we're 10 minutes, 15 minutes in and into our conversation, and we this is a deep dive we're doing here. I don't mind it. That's
no shallow conversations with me.
How many hours do we have? You know, that kind of thing. Or, but no, it's you know, there's another. So for me, as you know, I would identify as an artist, as a visual artist. If you asked me on the street and we would just met and you'd ask me, hey, what do you do for a living or something? Right. I would say like, oh, I'm a visual artist. I paint, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But of course there's, but I'm also an educator, you know, these things then sort of like come in and they create this sort of like this fabric basically of what I'm interested in basically.
Right. Well, how do they feed off of each other? How do they influence each other, I guess? Well, both.
You know, there's a side in me of me that, you know, if I said, you know, I'm, you know, what this is 2022. We're just coming right out of this crazy pandemic. And so, you know, hopefully we're coming out of it and it's not creating yet another chapter or something, variant, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, where, but this is also, in my case, I live in New York City. It's, you know, from my background, I'm European originally. I've done a lot of teaching here and in Europe also. And I've done a lot of teaching to, in art schools, basically to people that do not come from that privileged silver spoon background, mm-hmm. that affords them with, you know, grand tours of London, Paris, and Rome,
right.
During their teenage years, and then off to art school because, right. Hey, that's what we fancy or so.
Yeah.
You know, it's so hip right now, but rather people that see it, that come from an immigrant background, that see the opportunity basically to, through whatever visual communications or art making, mm-hmm. basically to do something that's cool and different, and it's an opportunity basically. And of course New York City is also full of that. You know, it's really an immigrant city. And I came here, I'm an immigrant, you know, I wasn't born here. So
right.
I live in Washington Heights. It's in the northern tip of Manhattan. On the northern tip of Manhattan, it's a very typically Hispanic community, but also traditionally, you know, Jewish immigrants from Europe from the 30s and 40s, basically. Mm-hmm. So all of that surrounds me as part of my daily. Mm-hmm. Daily life,
all of that culture, that's awesome. It's
part of the culture, right? So, you know, you know, when I'm in my studio, I often, you know, that's you know, when I'm in my studio, I have my painterly practice, and my painterly practice often starts with sketches or drawings that I bring home. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be New York. It sometimes also travels. I think that's how we originally connected with something that you had seen from Maine.
Yeah.
Island.
Not Desert Island, Maine.
When you had, that we found each other.
Yeah,
That was during a vacation. That was basically just, you know, traveling along that gorgeous coastline that is Maine, basically, mm-hmm. the Atlantic coast, wild and raw and gorgeously beautiful. So you just sit down and you don't have to pick any place. You just sit down, you open your watercolors and you start and it'll come to you. You know, it's right there. You know, you can't miss it.
Right, right.
But oftentimes, you know, these things have in the past from other travels also. Then when I'm in my studio and I'm painting, then that becomes basically a bigger canvas, or it becomes a series of things or so. And oftentimes they end up almost in abstract, you know, they move from the landscape drawing or the cityscape drawing, the building where you can make out details and whatnot,
right,
to something that's much more abstract.
Well, that answers my question that I was going to ask you, because I was noticing that you have these fabulous landscapes that are very detailed and you can tell they're beautiful. You can just tell like exactly what they are, or even if you know the area. But then you also have these really cool abstract pieces. And I was going to ask, and you do the landscapes and stuff in plein air. And I was going to ask you kind of like what inspired, like, well, obviously the inspiration probably was just the beauty of the landscape, but like, what inspires the abstract and what inspires the plein air?
Brooke, that's a very good question. I have two answers to that. Oh, there's two things. I would say, Pablo Picasso once said famously, or he said it more than once, he made sure that it was jotted down and kept, you know, he was very keen about that.
Right.
Those things. He said once, there is no true abstraction.
Okay.
You know, he had moved from this very sort of like, almost at the beginning, classical,
very realistic
drawings and paintings, figurative and very, you know, you could really make out this is the person and this is how they're sitting at the table and whatnot.
Right.
And
well, mm-hmm.
the blue and pink periods basically with like people starving and or starving artists and acrobats and circus people and stuff from those days. And then he moved into the 20s and 30s with cubism and then further abstraction of figurative. But he always said, oh, there is no true abstraction. Anything that is abstract basically has its roots in nature.
Realism.
There's only realism. There's only nature. There's observation. And nothing can basically be, you know, but of course that was Picasso in the 20s and 30s. And since then, of course, during the 40s and 50s, we had Pollock. And we had Rothko and so forth, abstract expressionists, and a real serious substantial level of abstraction. So this is a whole subset of, you know, could be discussed separately,
right,
basically. But you know, in my case, I would say that my abstracts come actually originate often or most often in cityscapes or landscapes, actually from that start out with simple sketches or drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not so unique as a painterly practice to actually go from the figurative to the very concrete realism, etc., to abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
If you're basically going from scribbles to sketches to drawings to studies that plan out a painting, etc., and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You can go one of two ways. You can either go and say like, well, I have all these loose sketches that I brought home in my sketchbook and then I could create something that's much more detailed.
Uh-huh.
Edward Hopper did this in his landscape and then also in his city paintings, for instance, Nighthawks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his most famous one that's in Chicago.
Yeah.
That he did hundreds of very loose sketches, basically, that eventually all merged and resulted in this gorgeous painting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his process, basically. But you can easily go from detailed drawings and sketches in the opposite direction and end up in something that if you saw the painting, you would have no clue or no way of knowing where it started, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the title sometimes gives it away, maybe.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Sometimes the titles of my paintings refer to a location, or they refer to a piece of music, let's say,
mm-hmm.
that I was listening to while I was starting out with a composition or something.
Right.
I also would like to, I said early on, you know, when you had asked the question, Brooke, that there's two ways to answer that. And another way of answering abstract art is also, you know, there's the outer world, and the outer world, you open your window or you walk outside and there it is, beautiful landscapes or buildings or whatnot and people, et cetera, and so forth. And you can capture that with art. Mm-hmm. There's also our inner world, and the inner world is an emotional world, or can be, you know, think of meditation or something, you know, it's like this, oh, we are a vessel and we're going to empty ourselves. And that is one of the goals of meditation practice, let's say, right. So it's a very, it's easy to see from there that, you know, the inner world, if you close your eyes and you empty everything that surrounds you, what's left are very pure emotions. And you, one way to bring them outside and to basically produce something that that is reflective of those emotions, it can be abstract art.
Yeah.
You know, so you have,
absolutely.
I can testify being basically having followed both of those paths, basically, in getting from realism to abstraction, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
That makes
complete sense.
That's the academic answer to starting with Picasso quotes, you know, to a simple question.
Well, I had actually never heard that quote from Picasso, but I love that. That's really, and I'm surprised I haven't heard it, but that's very cool.
I don't know. There's this guy Richardson. He's like he was the top expert basically for Picasso, and he wrote many books and whatnot about Picasso, and he taught, what was it, at Yale or at Harvard? I forgot. I think he may have been at Yale, but anyways, he knew Picasso in person, et cetera. But I think if you took his 10,000 pages of writings about Picasso or something, he probably still didn't know everything that Picasso said, because Picasso loved to talk about.
Well, yeah. Sure. yeah.
Yeah, I could. One thing Picasso was really interested in, you know,
in himself. I've heard that. I've heard that. So you were telling me that you have a group show coming up in the end of July.
It's actually on right now.
So I was going to ask if it was on right now.
It's through the end of July. It's on through July 31st. It's in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. One Brooklyn Bridge Park is the location. It's right on the water. It's a gorgeous spot there. And it is organized by an artist organization from Manhattan called Shashama. And they basically take, for instance, empty retail spaces and make them available for artists, which is awesome.
That. Yeah.
And also for performing arts. So they've been doing this for like 20 years or so. If you look up Shashama, Shashama, you'll find them. And they also have a artist in residence program, where they have a beautiful place upstate New York that's north of 2 hours, 2.5 hours north of New York City. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to get accepted to participate in a month-long artist residency there last year in the fall. It was a very productive month with no Wi-Fi, basically,
and lots of awesome. That is awesome.
A couple of like-minded other artists, because it's like a larger, there's like between 3 and 6 at any time artists there. And this group show now is basically the alumni group show of the people that were there last year. And I have 5 abstract panels there. I'm so happy, Brooke, I can't tell you how thrilled I am for the opportunity to be with you know, like-minded artists and stuff, and being able to show in this very hip area of Brooklyn. And it's on basically daily without the exception of Mondays through July 31st. It may lead to other collaborations and stuff. That's also something that I'm always interested in.
That is awesome. That is so exciting, Roland. So that is really amazing. This has been so great. I'm so glad you reached out to me.
I cannot believe how time flies. No.
Yeah. It's yeah.
30 minutes. Boom.
Yeah. Totally. We'll have to do it again.
I'd be delighted to do it again, and I'm certain that we would not run out of topics.
Absolutely.
And I want to congratulate you on your wonderful program.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope you keep doing them. And I will certainly spread the good word also.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you. And I'm going to use more of your stuff for my coup de coeurs. I'm going to feature more of your art because I think it's great. So,
you know, it's the art world is a small, knitted, tightly knitted world, basically, of lots of friends and family and whatnot. And it's, you know, the support, we all can always be supportive of each other. You know, that's a wonderful thing. That's one of the fun things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Roland. This is fantastic. And I'll send you a link when this posts.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you so much to Roland DeVries for reaching out and contacting me. It was fabulous chatting with you. We'll do it again for sure. And if you want to see more of Roland, check out his website, rolanddefries.com. It'll be linked on the page. Thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production. Music by Corey Knoxville.